This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money, but are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Podcast Playground.
Hooray! I'm Buzz Knight, and this is the Taking a Walk podcast, where we love to interview musicians and authors and executives and old friends from the radio business. Dave Chachi Dennis, he's the president and co-founder of Bendstown, the leading international radio imaging company. He's one of the greatest guys, and I can't wait to talk to him on Taking a Walk next. Well, Chachi, thanks for being on Taking a Walk, albeit virtually, but it's so great to be with you.
Buzz, thank you so much for having me, man. It's an honor to be here.
We usually are at industry events, and at that point, it's a little hard to be able to break away and do the actual walk, but we could always give that a stab at another point.
I would love to do so. It was great seeing you in Vegas at NAB and spending some time with you there.
Did you lose the nest egg out there at all?
Yeah. You know, here's the funny thing. My mom loves playing the slot machines, and she'd asked how I did in Vegas. And I honestly did not have a moment of time to gamble even once. I never put a dollar into a machine or on a table. I generally do when I go to Vegas. I like to play a little bit of craps or blackjack or some slot machines, but I just never had a moment to do so.
What was the best part for you of being at the NAB in Vegas?
You know, my favorite part, Buzz, is seeing everyone such as yourself and hanging out. And I really had a great time at the cocktails and conversation. But as far as, you know, I guess the best takeaway from me in this particular NAB was really just all the conversation about AI.
It's actually really here.
It is. It is. As we speak, Congress right now is grilling the OpenAI creator, Sam Altman.
So what's your feeling? Is it something to 1,000% embrace or to walk cautiously towards?
Man, that is such a good question. I am of the opinion, and let me qualify this for a second. I may change my mind an hour from now because it's really hard for me to kind of just get my arms wrapped around it all. But we are really just trying to learn as much as we possibly can. Gary Wall, who I know you know well, owns the Jack format, really bright man. And he had said to me, this reminded him a lot of the dot-com era. And he had told me he'd actually lost a lot of money during the dot-com era because he invested early. And unfortunately, a lot of those companies went bust, the Pets.com, the Alta Vistas of the world. And while Google was born out of that era and eBay was born out of that era, a lot of companies did not succeed. And so he's kind of the opinion, and I agree with this, is to learn as much as we possibly can, try to figure it out, and then learn about how we can potentially deploy this for our own, you know, whether in our particular case, image in production and so forth. But I think at this point, we're in a mode where we're really just trying to learn. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm always embracing new technology and innovation. So I look at this as something to try to embrace. I just do fear an overdoing effect that is going to create this reliance on it that frankly becomes, you know, just another reason for there to be less bodies deployed. And that concerns me greatly.
I agree with that. I read an interesting, I think it was Ad Age article about the A in AI standing for average. At this point, everything that I've seen or heard come out of AI is average. It's impressive. And don't get me wrong, the fact that it scrapes the entire internet and can give you a synopsis on a speech or a book or a movie or whatever it is that you ask is incredibly impressive. But it's nothing that a human cannot do. It can certainly do it quicker, but there's nothing that's coming out of it at this point that I've heard or seen that you're like, oh my God, that's creatively brilliant.
So what shaped you and got you hell-bent on a career around radio?
It's a really good question. I honestly fell into it. I was going to school in San Diego at the University of San Diego, and I delivered a pizza to Michael Steele, who was doing nights at the time at Star 100.7 KFMB. And I struck up a friendship with him, and he eventually helped me get a job there screening calls, basically for his show. And then I became his producer slash sidekick. And after I graduated, Rick Dees hired me to be an assistant producer up here. And so I never really even thought about it as a career until I just kind of haphazardly fell into it. And I honestly just was completely enamored by it. And I remember when I first got that job there, just that incredible excitement of, you know, being in the studio, the energy at the radio station, the creatives, that whole vibe. And I've never lost that excitement for it.
When did you first realize that the people associated with the business were completely nuts?
probably pretty early on. I mean, I remember at the time Jeff and Jer were doing mornings, who I think are absolutely brilliant, and Tracy Johns was the program director, and there was just so many creative people with these quirky personalities. But I've always kind of gravitated towards that. My family is a bit like that, and I think of radio. When you went back, you know, at the beginning of the interview, and you asked what I liked the most about the NAB, is I love being around the creatives and the nutters, if you will. It's a lot of fun for me.
The nutters. I do miss, though, back to the NAB for a second, the fact that you used to see, you know, more program directors and market manager types there who obviously are part of the nut squad. And I didn't feel that was as prevalent.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. And I think that is sad. I've noticed that trend for the last several years. There's fewer programmers, fewer people at a station, a local level, and there's more executives. And while I love obviously seeing the executives, I do think that these events are unfortunately, and I don't know if it's a price or if it's a budget situation at the station level or a combination thereof, but I agree. We need to have more air talent. We need to have more programmers and more of those nutters there, if you will. Don Anthony does a great job with Morning Show Boot Camp, and a lot of talent come out to that. But I would certainly like to see more of the creatives at NAB.
So when did you first know you wanted to be a program director?
You know, at first I was very excited about being the sidekick and being on air, and Michael would send me out to do all these kind of crazy stunts out on the, you know, on the street, like drive-through Olympics. And we had this big, gigantic Cadillac from the 70s called the Surf Pig. And I would pull people over that had the Star 100.7 bumper sticker and give them, you know, prizes, concert tickets, and so forth. So I loved all that. And then I remember coming up here and I met Johnny, of all places, at Rod Stewart's house. Rod, at the time, the market manager here, Roy Lachlan, his wife, Ellen Kay, who still does mornings at Coast and does incredibly well, she was in a Rod Stewart video, and they had a release party, viewing party for this Rod Stewart video that Ellen starred in, and I got invited to go to this, and Johnny was there, and Gwen Roberts, who worked at Kiss and was a fixture at Kiss for many, many years, introduced us, and I was like, wow, man, this is really kind of fascinating. We're from the same town. He was a legendary AC programmer. He was programming Coast and KBIG at the time. And I just got really interested on the programming side, really through him. And so Roy allowed me to transfer over to go become Johnny's programming coordinator. And so I was very fortunate to, you know, learn by Johnny. I got so lucky, Buzz, to have incredible mentors around me. I had Tracy Johnson, who I think is a creative and a brilliant programmer, and Johnny, who are very different. Johnny's much more of a meticulous programmer and more much about the details. But I felt got to learn from these two different sides, but both equally successful PDs.
So that set your sights on being a PD at the age of 28 years old. You were the youngest PD in LA history at that point.
Yeah, I got really lucky. Johnny at that point in his career was looking to kind of slow down a little bit. And he was basically became kind of a consultant and really just a mentor to myself and then to Stella at the time. So Stella was given the PD role at Coast, and then I was at KBIG.
Were you scared to death at first?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, at that point too, and this is 2000, I think that was in 2004, which is crazy. That was 19 years ago now. But I remember, you know, every 10th of a point was $1 million worth of billing, annual billing for the radio station. And so they watched those numbers incredibly closely. And there was a, you know, a tremendous amount of pressure. And then you're trying to, you know, I remember there just being a lot of chefs in the kitchen at that point. You had certainly Johnny at the point, Steve Smith was involved. You know, our market, we had co-market managers, Greg Ashlock and Roy Lachlan. I mean, there was a lot, a station manager, Craig Rossi. I mean, all great people, but there was just a lot of pressure. And I certainly, you know, had this great tutelage under Johnny and Tracy prior to that, but nothing really prepares you for that pressure and just, you know, dealing. And not only that, you had, you know, big air talent that you're contending with. And so it was a lot. A lot came at me very quickly.
What did you look at that period when you think of the promotional flair that existed in radio? And how does it look from then to now when you think of promotional flair?
Odd man, that's I think a great question, and I think kind of going back to what we were, you know, the initial point we were talking about in regards to AI, and unfortunately, I think our programming, our marketing has suffered over the years. Johnny told me the story in the 80s, and you're going to be blown away by the statistic, but when Johnny was programming Coast in the 80s, Dick Clark was the spokesperson. Cox owned him at the time. Their marketing budget was $4 million a year. Coast commercials were on the air practically 365 days out of the year. They had bus boards, billboards. I mean, you could not go, you know, in, you couldn't drive around LA without, you know, having Coast hit you everywhere. If you watch Where the Streets Have No Name by U2, that U2 video, you'll see a Coast billboard or a bus board drive through that video. That's how prevalent the marketing was. When I left KBIG, our marketing budget was, when I 2009, was $800,000 a year. Not to name names, but I do know someone who's a marketing director, a good friend of mine in a major market. He's now basically expected to just trade tickets to sports games for marketing. If they need a station van, they're just going to trade out tickets for that. And so that goes to kind of show you just how different we look at marketing now compared to what we did 30, 40 years ago.
Do you think the lawyers took some of the fun out of this too?
Yeah, I think sure, to some degree. I think that there's always, us creatives are always going to be at odds with attorneys, but the lawyers, I think, were always there, but I think a lot of it has to do now with, or most of it, I should say, is the economics. I'll go back to what Gary Wall, we were talking about him earlier over at Jack, and I think he shares a lot of wisdom with me. He was given an opportunity 20 plus years ago to buy a building in Nashville off of Broadway Street. I don't remember the exact price, but it was several hundred thousand dollars, maybe short of $1 million. It was right after 9/11. And at that point, Broadway was still pretty run down. It was not really there was a few bars and restaurants down there, but nothing compared to what it was now or what it is now. And he passed on that opportunity to invest in this building. And he saw the other day in the newspaper that that building just sold for $18 million. And his analogy was that at that point, he didn't see it. He didn't have the vision to see that Broadway was going to turn to what it is today. And it was really this undervalued real estate. And it just took someone to come in, redo that building, turn it into a great restaurant, a great bar. And it just kind of brought up the whole rest of the neighborhood. And we see that all the time with downtowns being revitalized and so forth. And the analogy is, in his mind, it's very much like radio. I think that radio stations are these incredible assets that unfortunately are, I think by our own doing, are kind of looked upon and being in a bad neighborhood. And I think that these stations need some investment, just like that building off of Broadway, to turn them into back to what they were. And when you look, and we'll tie this back into AI and back into my kind of assessment of right now it being average, if we continue just to put average content on a radio station, whether that's, and I don't mean this as a dig to anyone, but average air talent or average imaging or average, music or whatever it is, we're going to get average results. If we really invest and we revitalize these stations and we invest in that content, I do think that they can absolutely be turned around, just like that building in Nashville was turned around. But right now, I feel that we've kind of self-inflicted this wound because we've cut back so significantly on the marketing, on the investment in the talent, on, just the overall investment in the building.
So if we would approach where we are in the business with a beginner's sort of mindset, what advice with a fresh perspective would you give to operators influencers in the industry to make a difference?
I think the advice is right now for a lot of these companies, we need to, make investments, but I think part of that's going to be having to retool the economics, because a lot of the groups got themselves into way too much debt. And unfortunately, that leads to more and more cuts, and it makes it almost impossible for them to be able to make the investments that they need to. So I think it becomes, unfortunately, this spiral that's very hard to break. And so I was hopeful when we saw, Cumulus and iHeart go through those restructurings that there'd be more investment into these various assets. And I think that to some degree there has been, but I think unfortunately, economically, they couldn't have planned for the pandemic. They couldn't have planned for, what we're seeing with inflation. So I think it's been hard for them, given the current economic headwinds, to make those investments. And so you almost have to completely start from scratch in some ways, and maybe go back to where, back into the 70s and the 80s, where we just had a few handful of radio stations, but we really invested heavily in them.
So when did you first look at leadership skills and look at yourself and kind of hone those skills?
I don't know if I've ever honed them, Buzz. That's very nice of you to say. You know, a lot of it, again, very fortunate. My parents, you know, my father's a physician. My mom was a teacher. And so I think I naturally had a lot of good influences around me. And then I got to go to went to USD and I did student government there. And so got some, a little bit there. And then, you know, these just the mentors that I've had. I mean, I've been really fortunate to have, you know, great people around me and take time and, you know, share their knowledge. But I'm still, honestly, man, I'm learning every day.
When did you learn delegation?
You know, that probably, you know, a bit from Johnny, a bit from Tracy. Tracy was very, I was very, again, lucky to have people that empowered me. Craig Rossi, who is the market manager, the general manager here. I remember, you know, Roy Lachlan coming in and, you know, Roy would have his big yellow notepad with all his ideas. And he said, you're the program director, but you need to, you know, as the market manager, you need to give me basically time. Give me the time to pitch my ideas. And even if you don't like any of them, I just want you to hear them out. But I was never, there wasn't a lot of cram downs at the time when I was in the business. And so I was very lucky to have people that empowered me and ultimately took a chance on me.
So let's talk about how Benstown came to be created. Talk about that whole process. Walk me through it.
Yeah. So in 2009, I was invited to leave Clear Channel. That was when President Obama, the day
invited to leave.
President Obama was getting inaugurated that day, and they had major layoffs. It was right after Bain Capital bought the company. And if we go back in the time machine, that was something they didn't want to close on, and there was a bunch of legal maneuvering, and ultimately a judge forced that, and so they had to make a lot of cuts. It was in the throes of the financial recession. And so they made some bold moves, and I got caught up in that. And through Tracy Johnson, so many things go back around to Tracy. I had been introduced to my partners, Andy and Ollie. He was overseas, and he was in Europe, I think at Radio Days or something along those lines, and met Andy and Ollie. And they had come over prior to 2009 to the States to see him, wanted to tour a U.S. radio station. And so Tracy had called me going, hey, do you mind showing him around? It was my FM at the time. I said, absolutely. I took him to Bob's Big Boy for, for an All-American meal. And they were in the jingle business, and they were interested in growing here in the States. And so when I got let go, it really kind of was an opportunity to start a business with them. And we saw a space with imaging libraries. And so we started with four or five libraries. And shortly thereafter that, we grew into voiceover and custom imaging and then long-form syndication. And it just all kind of came together really organically and through, you know, just ultimately relationships.
And how did the team come together? Did it come together organically as well?
It really did. I initially, Masa, who's been with us almost from the very beginning, I knew him. He was invited to leave Clear Channel the same day. He was at Premiere, and we didn't know each other at the time, but Eileen Thorgerson had introduced us afterwards. And so I remember hiring Masa, and I would just write him his paycheck out of my own personal account at the beginning. I just, you know, I was lucky. At the time, I was bitter about it, but candidly, in retrospect, Clear Channel took good care of me on the back end. I had like 9 months worth of severance. And then Tracy again comes to my save to my rescue. He was working at the time for M2O, and so I got hired to work at M2O to consult. Those were loyalty reward programs when that was a big deal in Reg John's company, and Tracy was working there. And so I got to do that and kind of build Benstown simultaneously. So it all really worked out very well. And in retrospect, professionally, while I loved being a program director and really enjoyed the people I worked with and just had a great time, in retrospect, professionally, it turned out to be the best thing that could have happened to me.
That sounds like an understatement, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on the day. There are certain days where you're like, well, I don't know. This can be more of a headache than I would like. But there are more days than not, Buzz, that I am incredibly fortunate and feel very lucky for the people that I get to work with, the clients that we get to work with, and all the people that have supported me.
So when your roadmap for Benstown, How do you put innovation in the midst of that roadmap during challenging economic times?
That's tough, man. And it's easy to be critical of some of the operators, like we were talking about a couple minutes ago. But it is very tough when you're in those, the economic challenging times, and just interest rates, as much as they've gone up here over the last few months, or the last, I should say 14 months, our price of lending or borrowing, I should say, has gone up almost 400%. And so it all of a sudden becomes much more expensive to invest, which is very, very challenging from an operator standpoint, or even from our standpoint. So you've got to, and I don't have to worry about, I've got partners and so forth, but I don't have to worry about shareholders and making sure that, you know, private equity investors are getting their ROI. So I'm very lucky in that regard. If you want, by the way, I don't know if you've read this or not, Buzz, but just a little bit of a tangent. Have you read Jeff Simoleon's book, Never Ride a Roller Coaster Upside Down?
I have.
He goes into, great book, right? And he goes into, you know, some of those struggles when all of a sudden radio went from, you know, Wall Street's darling to, you know, no one was interested. And so there's all these economic forces that the operators have to abide by that I personally, because we're a much smaller company, don't have any shareholders and so forth, don't have to rule by. And so back to, sorry, it's a long way around the barn, but back to your original question, we tend to be pretty bold here. So we don't take giant salaries. I'm well paid and I'm very fortunate, but we and the partners feel the same way. We really invest very heavily back into the company. So not all the time does that pay off. There are times where we make a mistake and we invest in things that that end up failing. And that, you know, we learn from those mistakes. But I guess we go big. And so that's kind of the long way around. We're not afraid to invest and ultimately make less money, but feel it's the right thing for the we make less money because we feel it's the right thing for the company to reinvest. That answer your question?
Totally.
Yeah.
What are some of the favorite musical experiences you had in your career that you can share?
Great question, man. Humphreys by the Bay in San Diego is an amazing venue out in Shelter Island. And I think in 97 or 98, I can't remember exactly when, Michael Hutchence came through from NXS. And I always was just a gigantic NXS fan. And this was like the last time he came through before, unfortunately, tragically taking his own life. And I remember being at Humphreys, having these amazing seats. I mean, we were practically front, maybe two or three rows back, but just these amazing seats. And I felt like he was just, he was the epitome of a rock star. And so that probably stands out the most to me because I was just really young, really into NXS. And here I got to like see, you know, see them live, even though he was on the, you know, unfortunately not in a great part of his career, it was still something very memorable. And then I don't have Google in front of me, but I cannot remember exactly what year he had passed away. But Michael happened to be on vacation and I was on the air and he had committed suicide in Australia. And so it was the next day in Australia and I was doing nights at KFMB. And KFMB had a television station in the building as well. They were the CBS affiliate. And so I was there doing the show by myself and in comes the TV station to do an interview with me about Michael Hutchence passing away. And that was, obviously incredibly sad news, but it was very surreal for me. I'd probably been in the position for, you know, a year or maybe, you know, less and here like an idol of mine, you know, I died and I'm being interviewed to comment on it. That was a very, I know it's macabre and dark, but that's probably what stands out to me most. One more too on that. I got to take, my dad was always a huge Carlos Santana fan, and I got to take him to see Carlos Santana at the Hollywood Bowl, and we got to go backstage and meet Carlos Santana and did a whole photo shoot, and my dad just absolutely loved that. So that's also really memorable.
That's awesome. Yeah. Talk about your foray into podcasting since you're on a podcast.
I keep on bringing up some of the same people, but it's funny. These people have been so integral in my life. It was Gary Wall's idea. Gary had, we were having dinner a few years ago here, and he thought, you know, you should do a podcast, where you interview, you know, people in the business. And, it was really his brainchild. And, I didn't really buy into the idea at the beginning. And, then I finally decided, you know what, let's do it. I tried my first one with Johnny K, and it worked out all right, I think.
I think you're pretty natural.
Well, that means a lot coming from you, my friend. I'm a big fan, in speaking of podcasts, a big fan of your podcast, and really enjoy listening to it. And I've really enjoyed being on with you, man. It's like I said at the beginning, I am very grateful for everything you've done for us over the years, and in the partnership that we've had. I'm a big fan of your podcast, and thank you for thinking of me and considering me.
Well, thank you for always being first class, supportive, curious, and a dear friend. I so appreciate you being on.
Well, anything we can ever do for you, Buzz, please do not hesitate to ask. And I could not recommend you any more. I think you are a brilliant programming mind, and I would love to work with you more in the future.
Thanks, Chachi.
Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.